Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Better Than Bad. I'm your host, Jess. We are back with a brand new episode today. But if you haven't checked out the previous episode, then make sure you go back because I was joined by Brett and we discussed all things Tom Cruise. But today I'm very excited because I'm joined not by one guest, but I have two guests today. I'm joined by Taylor and Patrick. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
You are more than welcome. We have gone international for the podcast because we've got Taylor and Patrick in America. I'm in the UK. We're bringing it all together. It's a great day for everyone.
And we're talking about an Australian too. So
yeah, we're bringing everything in.
Globetrotters.
So do you want to tell the people who we're talking about today?
So we're talking about Hugh Jackman. We went kind of back and forth on a couple people, but it is so interesting how home media availability is so much different across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
Some of the things that you could find easily, we could only find for like $200 on eBay. So, we landed on Hugh.
It was a funny time with trying to decide whether to do Hugh Jackman because of one particular film that we were all like, do we really want to watch this? But we'll get into that in a moment. So if people don't know who Hugh Jackman is, I don't know how you wouldn't. He's everywhere. But he's a Tony Award-winning Australian actor. He was made his name for himself in theatre, mainly musical theatre, and then he sort of broke into Hollywood. He is probably best known for his role as Wolverine in the X-Men franchise. That's probably where everybody knows him from. But today we're not talking about any X-Men films because his highest rated film on IMDb is The Prestige, which has 8.5 stars. It has a 76% Rotten Tomatoes rating. And his lowest film, the film we were all dreading. When I first started this podcast, I knew this film was coming up because there's so many actors in it, and I knew it was going to be at the bottom somewhere. And that film is Movie 43, which has 4.3 stars. It has 4% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's very, very low.
That's very generous.
I would say 4.3 stars on IMDb is a bit much, personally.
I'm assuming this must be like a zillion people's lowest rated film, right?
It is. So when I was first looking at different actors, just typing in random actors into IMDb, the amount of times that Movie 43 popped up as their lowest, I was like, oh God.
That was like one of the reasons why I wanted to do Hugh, because like I knew you'd have to do it at some point. And I kind of wanted to be the first people to talk about it.
Oh my goodness.
And here we are.
Yes.
So we'll start off by talking about Movie 43 because then it gets it out of the way.
Exactly.
So some facts for the people. It's like I said, it's got 4.3 stars on IMDb. It was released in 2013. It has a plethora of writers and directors and actors. It stars, obviously, Hugh Jackman, and he stars alongside Kate Winslet, most notably, in his little segment. And his segment was called The Catch. It was written by Rocky Russo and Jeremy Sissonko.
I'm sorry, I never knew what it was called. That's kind of funny.
The Catch. It has a story by Bill O'Malley, and it was directed by Peter Farrelly. And yeah, the film's like a series of interweaving, like, comedy. I use that very loosely. Comedy sketches. and that's basically the film. Had you seen this before?
So I had seen it before because when it came out, I was a 16-year-old boy whose best friends all loved to watch bad movies together. So after we hit The Rooms and the Troll 2s of the world, Movie 43 was like a must-watch for us. So I am ashamed to say I've probably seen this movie like 5+ times. I've seen it a bunch. But Taylor had never seen it before. In fact, she didn't really know anything about it, right, T?
No. So I mean, I'm pretty positive, unless I just have completely blocked it out of memory. I don't think I've ever seen this movie. And Patrick was like, do you know like what this is about? And I was like, oh, it's like Scary Movie, right? Like it's like that franchise. And he just laughed and was like, kind of. And he was like, I'm not going to tell you anything about it. Just go in blind. And I was like, oh, great. I was like, Hugh Jackman is the first person like in it, like in the first, you know, sketch. I was like, sure, like let's go for it. Like lots of Hugh. And then when he disappeared, Patrick was like, yeah, he doesn't come back. And
that was like, the best part of our viewing experience was like after his 5-minute sketch and Taylor's mouth was on the floor. And I said, by the way, he's never in the movie again. We have 90 minutes left and we're never going to see him again.
Yeah. Listen, we go through that a lot with Vince.
That is true. So
we are always like, it's like 2 seconds and it's like, oh, well, let's figure out how to talk about his performance for 2 seconds. But I do feel like we have a lot to talk about with Hugh's performance here. So
yes,
small but mighty role.
I'd never seen this film before. It was one of those things. I'd heard about it because there's so many famous actors in it, but I was like, I'm not watching that. And then obviously started this podcast and set myself up real bad for that. And yeah, so this was the first time watching and it was as bad as I thought it would be.
It's often like unbelievably bad, you know, like
I was in shock.
Yeah. Yes, I think so was Taylor. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm at the point now where like I said, I've seen it like way too many times. And so like, I know like all of like the punchlines and like the twists in each sketch and stuff, but it's unbelievable that it's an entire movie with just dozens of famous actors and like great actors too, that is built around like poop jokes.
Yeah.
And like just horribly crude sex jokes and race. It's just like they just chose like all of the worst things to try and make a comedy about.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I don't want to come across as a movie 43 apologist. So I'm gonna choose what I say very wisely here. But I will say, maybe it's because we had just watched the movie The Dilemma, and I was like, that was the worst movie that I've ever seen in my entire life. But like, don't get me wrong, movie 43, awful, horrible. But worst movie ever made, I don't know. I feel like that may be, I don't know. I feel like that, like, I at least, at the very least, respect the commitment. Like, they went for it. And I think that that is commendable. I think that there are people who just show nothing for 90 minutes or 2.5 hours, honestly. So, and like, those are tougher to get through for me. So I, at the very least, like, appreciated the fact that they just said, you know what, screw it. We're going for it. We're going for it with every single person in Hollywood. We're going for it in every single possible horrible direction. Like, kudos to them, because I would not have the balls. No pun intended.
That's the thing, though, is like, I don't understand how, and I think it's like people just kind of gave up like trying to figure out how this movie even got made. Right.
I'm convinced that they had something on all of these actors. I'm convinced that the producers were like, if you don't do this film, then I'm going to reveal all of your deepest, darkest secrets. So Hugh Jackman, you've got to come here and have a pair of testicles attached to your neck, because that's what you've got to do to avoid this.
Listen, this is my conspiracy theory. I think it was FOMO. I think that they faked it till they made it, and they went up to all of these actors just confident, and they were like, listen, everybody in Hollywood has signed on to this. So like, clearly you're the one that's going to be out. Do you really want to be the last person not to be involved in this? And like, keep in mind, in my conspiracy theory, like no one was signed on to this. But I think they just lied. And then everyone was like, damn, I don't want to be the only person in Hollywood not attached to this. And I think that, like, somehow they just, like, totally manipulated the actors into doing it. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, maybe blackmail was a part of it. But I honestly feel like, I don't know. I think that they just, they had a fear of missing out.
Yeah, quite possibly. I feel like actors are self-involved enough to have that fear.
Also, maybe they were all individually like, well, if everybody's in on it, then I can't possibly be individually picked on for it. Like, it's not just me.
But that's the thing, though. It's like, I don't even understand, like, even if that's the case, how do you read this script and be like, my fear of not being a part of something huge is bigger than my complete disdain for this movie? I mean, like, there are people, like, in it that, like, that make sense for it, you know? Chris Pratt, like, you know, the height of his frat bro Chris Pratt thing. Like, yeah, this makes sense. This is, like, the kind of movie that he should be in, or wasn't at the time, you know? But, like, Hugh Jackman and Kate Winslet, like, what? Like, who? I don't understand how you could ever think this was a good idea.
Yeah, there are, like, quite a few lowbrow people involved. Like, when we were watching the scene with Kieran Culkin, I was like, oh yeah, like, I believe this. Like, perfectly cast. And, like, Justin Long and Jason Sudeikis, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, like, that's, yeah, sure.
But yeah, when you get these, like, huge people, like Hugh Jackman, you're just like, what the hell? Like, you know, those are not people you couple with Jason Sudeikis and Justin Long. Like, the range of A to D list celebrities was vast.
I just don't understand how, like, particularly, I kept thinking about it with particularly, like, Kate Winslet, like, based on the stuff she's done in the past, I was like, how did she sit there with this script and go, this is the job for me?
Yeah, like, I don't, like, did they think it was funny? Did they think that it would play funny? Like, this is a joke. Okay, this sketch is, you know, what, 5 minutes long? Mm. And it's built around one joke. And they do different variations on that joke 11 times. And it's also, at the end of the day, it's the joke is just that he has testicles on his neck. Like, there's nothing clever about it, you know, like, there's nothing that, like, lends itself to, like, building up the comedy. It's just the same, like, ew, that's gross thing.
And the fact that nobody will acknowledge it. Nobody will acknowledge the fact that he has testicles other than Kate Winslet.
Yeah, and there's no end point to it either. It's like, there isn't a resolution to it where he goes, oh, these. It's just like, what is going on? Like, when he took his scarf off, I did, like, audibly, like, gasp. I was like,
I did
as well.
Coming?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I knew nothing about this.
I just, like, this is so funny to me because, like, I guess I thought that everybody watched this movie at some point in their life, like, during a bad movie night or a sleepover or something. But I guess, like, no, that was just me and my weirdo friends.
And I can confirm his friends are the exact people to actively want to watch this.
Okay. I would like to preface this with we didn't laugh at it. Excuse me, we didn't laugh with it, we laughed at it, which I think that's kind of what you were doing too, Taylor, because you were busting a gut the entire movie.
Okay, whoa. Not the entire movie. Sure, there were a couple things that were making me giggle. And I will say, I said I had never seen this movie, and I have not, but I will say I have definitely seen one of the sketches, and that was the one with Jimmy Bennett and Chloe Grace Moretz. I have definitely seen that floating around. Also, I just want to take this time to say that Jimmy Bennett was my ultimate first crush in Hollywood, and I was terrified of horror movies as a kid, and I watched Orphan just to watch him in it. So I was like, aw, I was like thrown back in this moment, like, aw, like, I loved him so much. He doesn't do anything now.
Yeah, I'd seen that sketch with Chloe Grace Moretz. I don't remember where. I think that was just circling the internet.
Yeah, because I don't have an origin for it either.
So I think, yeah, it was just like on Twitter or something. Everyone was like, oh my God, look at this. And I remember when I saw that thinking, this is not funny. but go off, like, you do you. And then when I actually watched this film, I was like, ah, okay, it's all like that.
Yeah. It's just relentless. It never, there's never like, it's one, at least there's like one redeemable moment, or like, at least there's that one sketch that isn't built upon something that's like incredibly offensive. No, it's just like, it just never stops.
Yeah.
I just saw all of them were just a bit like dodge. And then I did read some trivia about the film, and apparently it took 4 years to make this film. Because they had to like fit it in around all of these actors' schedules. And apparently they did the Hugh Jackman one first, and then that was what was used to secure funding for the rest of the film. So again, I'm just confused as to what the discussions were in those meetings. Like, you want to fund this film? Look, it's Hugh Jackman with balls attached to his neck and Kate Winslet looking slightly shocked.
And Richard Gere was like, this is the movie for me.
This is it. This is going to put me back on the map.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's wild, honestly. But I will say, like, don't get me wrong, the sketch with Hugh Jackman is like jarring, and like, I was with you, my jaw was literally completely on the floor. I was like, what the hell am I watching? But I guess it's like the least, other than being like just straight up crude visually, I guess it's like the least offensive one. So like, I guess I can see how,
I don't know, like, it has people, like, straight up testicles in it, like, I don't,
that's what I'm saying, like, it's visually crude, but there are things that are like straight up racist and straight up, like, you know, like, there, you know, there's like a million ists that this movie is. And like that one, yes, it is jarring to see a ball sack on your screen. I don't know how this got greenlit, but I can see how like someone could watch that and just be like a dumb bro and be like, oh, haha, that's funny. And like, it's not offending anyone other than visually. There are other ones that are legitimately horribly offensive and weird. Like, it gets like so much worse from there.
They eased people in.
Yeah. Like it's crazy to say that he had ball sacks, a ball sack on his neck. Let me correct myself. A ball sack on his neck. And that was easing people in. Like, just think about that.
It's too much. I remember when I was watching the Halle Berry sketch, and like towards the end of that, I was like, oh my God, how did they do this? And everyone was like, yeah, this is cool. Once they all had that plastic surgery done, I was like, this is not good.
For me, it's like the one where like the iPod is like a woman.
Oh my God. What is it called? Like I woman or something?
It's I babe.
I babe. Yes. Yes.
And I just like, I cannot believe that like movies are like very hard to get made. And like a lot of people have to read the script. And so like hundreds of people read this script, and like nobody saw the issue with this. I'm looking at the friggin' thing now. There are five people are credited as writing that sketch. It took five people to write that.
There's barely any words, aren't there? Isn't it just like music and dancing?
It's like the 2 minutes before the music and dancing.
Yeah. Really what it is for me is not that sketch, but at one point in the film, I think it's, I want to say it might be in between the Hugh Jackman and the next one, but they just cut to that like commercial, and you go like, that's weird. That's weird that a naked woman was just on my screen and it said, I babe. And then like 45 minutes later, they go back to it and you're like, oh, I didn't want them to do that. I did not want more information about I babe.
I didn't want to go back to that. We needed to end that where it ended.
Yeah. Like, at least it has shock value if it's just like a bumper, you know, but like, we did not need to see it twice.
Jess, I have a question for you, because I was reading up on this, and apparently there's a, like, an American version of the movie and a UK version of the movie.
There's a UK version?
So the framing device is different in the two edits.
Oh my God.
So what was the framing device in the version that you saw?
The version that I saw, it was two boys were on a laptop.
Oh, yes. You have the UK version.
Oh, my gosh. Is it different?
Yeah.
Completely.
What's the frame in for
you? It's Dennis Quaid.
It's Dennis fucking Quaid. I'm sorry. I don't know if I can curse on here. It's Dennis Quaid. It's Dennis Quaid.
Listen, we're going to say a lot more than curse on this episode.
And he's got like this, like, how would you describe his haircut?
Dave? Gun?
Okay. How would you describe his haircut?
He has this like
Justin Bieber haircut.
It's yeah, it's like an emo.
So it's grown like, man, 50-year-old Dennis Quaid, and he's got this like
he's like wrinkly, and it's like a short like emo haircut. So it's not quite like Jason Schwartzman like full on covering the eyes. It's just like a half attempt at an emo haircut. Like someone took his naturally like longer coif that he usually keeps up and out and just straightened it in front of his face.
And it's him and it's Greg Kinnear, and Greg Kinnear is like a Hollywood executive.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dennis Quaid holds him at gunpoint and is pitching all of these different shorts as like movies that he wants Greg Kinnear to fund because Dennis Quaid is like
so they're all separate.
Yeah, yeah. So they're like all pitches for like feature length movies.
And what? Greg Kinnear is like, how did you get here? And he was like, I sucked off the security guard. Wait, and Greg Kinnear is like, you what? And he's like, I sucked off the security guard. It is exactly as it sounds. So it's just like Dennis Quaid waving a gun in Greg Kinnear's face as they go around the building and get this greenlit. All of these movies individually greenlit.
Oh my God.
Wait, so now we need to hear about yours.
It was literally just these two boys that were trying to like, they were trying to break their brother's computer or something. And they were trying to find like dodgy sites. And when they were clicking on the sites, it was coming up with these different videos that were these sketches.
That's that weird. Was the, that I don't was feel the like frame. That makes sense.
Why was it different?
I have no idea. I just
maybe because the UK just, like, doesn't have it. Hollywood, they would not understand. No, I don't know. That's like, so weird. If anything, I appreciated Dennis Quaid because I love that man.
No, it's horrible. It's really
it is really bad,
painfully unfunny, and they go back to it every is. 5 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm in slight shock.
I know. This is so weird. I didn't know that.
That's so bizarre that they're different.
Yeah, I had no idea about that.
I'm so confused.
There's no reason.
It amazes me, like, when people see, like, early, like, those, like, test screenings and stuff and give feedback and, like, the way that things change. Like, it is, I don't know. It like, you think that movies are just, like, made. That like they're people are just generally trusted to make the movies that they wrote and directed. Nope. And then you find out that like every single person in the world has input. And it's like, wow, this is weird.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. I don't know how this film got made, but like even worse that they made two versions basically.
Yeah.
I'm even more confused as well because the kids in the like in the framing device for the UK one were American, so
it's an American production. Were they like anyone of note?
No.
Okay.
So these poor American children were like, just got my big break in this big Hollywood film. They weren't even able to show their parents it because it's only on in the UK.
They couldn't even go to see it in theaters. They're not old enough.
They're like, why didn't I make the cut? You made the cut in the UK version.
To be fair. I was not a 12-year-old boy at this time, so I don't know. Maybe Patrick, you can speak on behalf of this.
I was a 16-year-old boy, but whatever.
No, I'm going even farther back.
Okay.
But you know, I have never had that male need to find dodgy crap on the internet. But I know some boys did. And like, I guess it is conceivable in that plot line that like people were willingly watching Three Girls, One Cup. That is real life, baby. That is not Hollywood. Like the people were willingly watching that for years just to see what the hype was about. So I guess in that plot line, like it's at least conceivable that people could like the kids could find crap like that. No pun intended again. That they could find like, you know, weird shit online. But yeah, I honestly, I don't know.
That's not the kind of like stupid sketches about like I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like going, that's not the kind Grace of stuff Moran's
getting
for.
Her period. No, yeah, for sure.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's very weird. Before we move on, I'm Dennis Quaid and I'm holding a gun to everyone's head. You must answer. If you had to pick your most enjoyed sketch, which one is it?
Wow.
I will go first if you guys need to think.
The complete silence.
None of them. I guess the one I could deal with the most was Hughes. And I'm not just saying that because we're doing an episode on him. Generally, that was the one that was like, okay, I can at least watch this. Yeah. I can get through this.
It's, yeah, they're all like, I feel like that's the only one that you can say without like coming across like a psychopath.
Yeah, which is why I'm about to come across as a psychopath.
Okay, I know what you're going to pick. Go ahead.
I know. I will completely admit that this is arguably one of the more fucked up of them. But something about the Jeremy Allen White sketch, just like, I could not stop laughing. Like, laughing at it, obviously, not with it. Like, that's horrible. But it was so unbelievably outlandish. And I was just not expecting to see any of those people on that screen, that I was just like, I could not wait for the punchline. And like, it delivered. I was so on that roller coaster ride. So bizarre. So unbelievably bizarre. I could not stop laughing. But I think I was laughing and like, oh, haha, I'm going to have to block this out soon. But right now I'm going to laugh because I don't know what else to do.
I think I just erased so many of them from my mind. I was just like, I can't even give this thought space. I've got limited memory space.
Unfortunately, it's all I can think about. I'm just kidding.
I have a fun fact about Hughes' sketch, though, that I thought would be fitting for the show. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I read this somewhere the other day, that there was like originally a punchline to the sketch, and the punchline was that it was going to be revealed that Kate Winslet had a third ear on her neck.
That is like not even fucking comparable. And I'm sure the additional punchline there is that he's like, oh, I can't be with someone with a third ear.
Yeah, of course.
Like the writing's on the fucking walls. honestly, I'm glad they left it how it was. At least it truly was not predictable.
Because yeah, she would have revealed the ear and he would have just been like, ew.
Yeah.
Be gone from my presence.
What's wrong with you? Like, why do you have a fucking third ear? Yeah, no. Listen, like I said, if nothing else, you gotta give credit where credit is due. Those people fucking went for it.
But speaking of like people going for it, what were our opinions on Hugh Jackman in this? His performance? What did we think?
Okay, so like I said, I had seen it before, so I knew what was coming. And like one of the reasons why, one of the many reasons other than making you all watch movie 43, that I wanted to talk about Hugh was that like I feel like he is one of our most versatile actors, and literally nobody ever talks about that. Like, yeah, sure, he gets great reviews in The Music Man, and yeah, sure, everybody loves the X-Men movies, but I don't think he gets enough credit that like every time he does something different, that like he can do literally everything. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated the fact that he's trying to make it work. Maybe that's because he genuinely believed in it. I mean, if it was the first sketch, like he saw something in it, I suppose. But like he's funny in it. You know, like he's hitting all the beats. You know, he's got the timing right. Like, yeah, he can do comedy. It's just unfortunate that comedy is like testicles on your chin.
If I was approached to be in this movie, I mean, first of all, I would have said no. If I'm Hugh Jackman and I see something in this and I'm like, yes, I am going to play the ball guy. they would have to CG those balls onto my neck. Because if I felt them dangling as I spoke and moved, I would not be able to keep it together. So the fact that he was able to like actually act through that scene is, I mean, give the man an Oscar. Like, I could never have done that. Like, the thinking about the feeling of prosthetic balls on my neck is like literally driving me to insanity right now.
Because they had the gag reel at the end, didn't they? You just see him with these like balls attached to his neck, and he's just like, I can't do this. He's like, they're like flapping about, and he's just like, okay, like shaking his head, and they're just moving. I was like, this. I do appreciate the fact that he had this opportunity, if we want to call it that, and he went with it. And you are right, Patrick, that he is very versatile as an actor, and that isn't really discussed that much. And he definitely sort of leans into this in the best way he can.
I thought he was like I thought that this exercise for him worked really well, because like his highest rated movie and his lowest rated movie are very different. Mm. You know, if you did this with Will Ferrell or something, which who knows, maybe you'll do one day, like those movies are gonna be like kind of the same bit, just like one will actually be funny and one will be really bad, you know. Mm-hmm. This like it's representative of like the fact that he makes every kind of movie and like takes on every kind of project.
Yeah, and that's what makes him quite interesting, and like his career trajectory as well is really interesting to me, because I originally trained in musical theater, so to see him go from being like a musical theater actor and theater-based actor to being this big like Hollywood star, that's quite rare. Because something that I was always taught when I was at like drama school and training was that if you do musicals, you're kind of stuck doing musicals for the rest of your career. And obviously he still does them like every now and again, but the fact that he's been able to forge this very like secure Hollywood career, yeah, is quite a rarity. So I do find that quite impressive.
Yeah. It is very interesting. He obviously like clearly like wants to do the musicals. Like he keeps coming back to them, you know, like it cannot be easy to do The Music Man 8 shows a week for a year. Like most Hollywood actors like don't want to do that. That's why they don't. Or they do, you know, the 12-week run or whatever, you know, but like he still like wants to go back to that like regularly. And I think that's impressive, you know, like he wants to, he cares. He probably thinks it's like important to like keep those reps up, you know, if you get away from it for too long, you can't go back.
I am going to use this opportunity to segue into just a little bit of a brag. And that is, I have been in the same room as him. He was at the performance of The Inheritance that I went to, part one, in New York when it was on Broadway. He was there. Hillary Clinton was there. Ashley Park and Michael Urie sat behind me, and we had great conversations. It was star-studded. And then on the way to the theater, I brushed shoulders with Pete Buttigieg and Chasten, his husband. So I was like, whoa, I can't handle any more stardom today.
She might not
know
who Pete Buttigieg is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pete Buttigieg is, he is the first openly gay, I think, right? Like major political candidate. Uh-huh. Yeah, I did not get a great view of Hugh. He was sitting a couple rows up and to the left of me. Other people near me got a better view, but I could see like the top of his head, and I was just like so unbelievably starstruck.
Can we talk about the fact that you just said the phrase, I didn't get a good view of Hugh, and like didn't even flinch?
Okay. What was I did not get a good look at him.
Well, theaters are the place to see celebrities. I used to work as an usher in some theaters in London, and you'd see some really random people just popping up, and you'd be like, hi, how are you? And you'd be like, okay. I mean, someone I did see actually in the theater that I worked at was someone who's in the next film we're going to talk about. This is an excellent segue. Thank you so much, Taylor, for setting this up.
Oh, you're so welcome.
I saw Michael Caine came to see a show that I was working front of house for, and he is in The Prestige. So the next film we're going to discuss is The Prestige. It is Hugh Jackman's highest rated film. It has 8.5 stars on IMDb, which is a very high rating for IMDb. It was released in 2006. It is directed by Christopher Nolan. It was written by Jonathan Nolan and Christopher Nolan, and is based on the book by the same name by Christopher Priest. There's lots of Christophers involved in this. It stars Christian Bale, Hugh Jackman, obviously, Scarlett Johansson and Michael Caine. And it's the tale of two rival magicians in their pursuit to outdo the other person and discover the other secrets behind their tricks. Had you seen this film before? Is this the first time you've seen it?
This is the first time for
first me. First time. Yeah, first time for both of us. I had never even heard of this movie.
That's right. I'm being honest. Saw movie 43 before I saw The Prestige.
Yeah.
I saw movie 43 like 7 times before I thought to watch The Prestige.
Yeah. I somehow just like totally missed this. I don't know. It was so weird because Patrick was like, all right, we're watching his highest and rated or highest and lowest. And I was like, oh, great. Prisoners and what? And he was like, no. And I was like, excuse me, what else is there? I am like not incredibly well versed with his, other than knowing of things, like there's really not a ton that I've like actually seen. I don't think I've seen any of the Wolverine movies.
I think he's another one, like another actor. When I was doing my episode about Dwayne Johnson, me and Sean were talking about this, about how there's like certain actors that like transcend just being an actor and they're like a fully fledged celebrity in every sense of the word. And I think Hugh Jackman is also that.
I would completely agree.
If you haven't seen everything he's been in, you still know who he is and you still kind of usually like him because he's quite, you know, charismatic and seems like a nice guy. Never met him, can't confirm, but seems like a nice guy. So I think he's sort of just like transcended into full celebrity status, which not all actors are.
Yeah, I think that's like such a good way to put him, because he's the kind of guy, and there are a few celebrities like this, where I think about them and I go, oh, like I must have seen all of his movies or all of their movies, just because like they're so like at the forefront of my brain when I think of celebrities. And then you go through their actual filmography and you go like, oh, no, I haven't. No. Oh, huh? And like, I feel like Hugh Jackman is one of those people where just because they exist around you all the time and not like jarringly, like, you know, Kim Kardashian or something, but just like you just know who he is, you know, and he's a movie star. So you're like, oh, I must know him from his movies. But no, you're right. He's like, he's just this charismatic, like handsome guy who's acted forever and has such a, like, you know, so he's just around.
Yeah, because I'd seen this film before, but it was literally I saw it this year. Me and my boyfriend sat down and watched it. We just like randomly picked a film and we were like, let's watch The Prestige. So I had seen it before, but fairly recently, and then obviously watched it again for this. But it wasn't one that was like fully on my radar. And considering it's Christopher Nolan as well, who's obviously a very famous director, you'd think that it'd be something that like most people had seen, but it seems to be like that it's not one that everyone has watched, which is quite interesting.
I was definitely a little nervous when I like heard the name Christopher Nolan attached to this. I will never forgive him for Tenet. Like I just... I can't move past it, because a man who can create Tenet, like his powers can clearly be used for evil. And I will stand by that.
I guess the first question about this film is like, did you enjoy it?
I'm going to sound like the worst person ever for being like, wow, movie 43, like it's horrible, but not the worst movie in the world. And then talk about The Prestige that has like a 4.1 on Letterboxd and being like, but like, here's my thing. I think that The Prestige is objectively a great film. You know, like there are so many great, just like, you know, it's well cast, it's well directed, the cinematography is beautiful. Like there are objectively really good things. I just don't know that I was that like in love with the story. Like I just, not that I didn't care about the story, but it's just like not really my kind of movie, I guess. Mm-hmm. I also, Patrick and I talk about this all the time on like our podcast, but like we are not huge fans of long movies unless it absolutely warrants the runtime, which I wouldn't say that this doesn't, but I just started like feeling the length after a little while.
Yeah. It's funny because the first time I watched it, I really, really, really enjoyed it. And then the second watch through was when I really felt the length of it. I was like, okay, this is a very long film.
I also will say it's clearly like a theater film, you know? Mm-hmm. What's the Harry Styles quote? It's like, it's a movie. Like, it's a real film. Go see it in a theater movie. And we were watching it on our TV, like, at home. Like, so it is absolutely a big picture film. And I kept thinking, like, if I just had the opportunity to, like, be in a theater and, like, immerse myself in the story, I think that I would have liked it so much more. But it is hard for me to watch long movies at home because I just like simply get distracted. Like, I will fully admit to that. It's really hard for me. I get like, there's so many things to do, you know, when you're in your house. So I just like struggled with that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys are saying. I also feel like I really liked it. It's a very good movie. It's very interesting. It kept me engaged despite it being way too freaking long. I feel like it's hard to talk any crap about it. Not that I feel the need like, oh, let me come on here and talk some crap about it. But at the end of the day, it is just Chris Nolan back on his bullshit. You know, like it's way too long. It's full of twists that you can see coming. It's got something to do with bending time, and it's got this bizarre mystery attached. Like, they're all of his movies, like they all feel like his movies, you know? And this was like, I feel like if you, not to say that he's made the same movie 10 times in a row, but if you make the same kind of movie 10 times in a row, like they're gonna just inevitably be held up against each other. And like, I think he's done this really, really well with some other movies. And so just because it was like pretty good here, it just feels like kind of like it fell short. Does that make sense?
There's different themes within this, but definitely in regards to his other films. Because it is, me and my boyfriend were going through the whole process of watching all these different films, we watched a few of his. And it is true that there are a lot that have very similar themes, and there are some that have definitely done it better. So I do completely see what you mean by that.
Like, the two movies he made after this are The Dark Knight and Inception, which are like arguably his two best movies. And so, like, I don't know, maybe he was building his way up to those or something. But like, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well made and very interesting, and I'm glad that I've watched it. But if I'm going to turn one of these on, I'm going to turn one of those on.
Yeah, I feel similarly. I also felt like it was, there were parts of it that were like a little confusing to me, but I also just kind of chalked that up to Christopher Nolan being Christopher Nolan. Like, I don't know, like when I watched Inception for the first time, when I was like a literal child, I was like, this movie is so confusing, what the hell? And then I watched it as an adult and I was like, oh no, this makes total sense. They literally spell it out for you like you're a baby. I just was an actual baby the first time I watched it and didn't get it. But I feel like this is a movie that just like, it would definitely come together more for me on a second watch. There was just kind of like a lot going on. And because it's not like the kind of story that I particularly gravitate to anyways, I just think I was just a little like, wait, there's two of them now and what? And like he's with Scarlett Johansson and then he's not, like, I don't know. There was just kind of a lot going on, I guess, because ultimately there's doubles, you know? And so
the whole movie relies on you just having knowing, to go along with the fact that basically everyone on the planet has someone that looks exactly like them.
Yeah.
For Christian Bale, it was his brother. Yeah, sure. Blah, blah, blah. But Hugh Jackman just like has another Hugh Jackman walking around.
I don't know.
And they just don't address it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's so strange. Like, because on the second watch, obviously I've seen it twice. Because you know all of that, I was kind of watching more of the background stuff. So I knew all of the, like, I knew the big reveal. I knew the, you know, the big twist at the end. And this is the thing with a lot of Nolan's films, is that because most of them do have a big twist at the end, once you know that and then you go back and you watch it again, it's like you're kind of piecing together the puzzle that he'd laid out that you weren't really paying attention to in the first place.
It's like Gossip Girl.
It's Gossip Girl.
Like when you watch Gossip Girl for the second time and you know who Gossip Girl is, like you can't, it's not the same anymore.
Have you guys ever seen Memento, the Christopher Nolan
That's
film?
The one I have left now.
I have not.
Because that's a similar thing. That's very confusing. And then you get to the end and you go, oh, okay. It makes sense now. And then I think if you were to rewatch it, it'd be like you'd be seeing the hints and what he was getting at.
There are movies like Inception that, like, I'm so captivated by the story that it's telling that if I get to the end and I'm like, okay, I am eager to watch this again so that I understand it better. You know, I am not like eager to watch The Prestige again to understand it better. Does that make sense? Like, mm-hmm. It was good, but like, I don't feel like I need to deep dive it.
That's the okay. This is the exact reason why watching movies with you makes my head spin. Because when you watch a movie with Taylor, you'll be 5 minutes in the movie and she'll go, wait, what's happening? And you're like, come on, man. Like, they barely even set it up. But then 2 hours later, she'll go, why is that character played by Christian Bale? And you'll be like, wait, what? Like, you always notice stuff that nobody else notices. And, like, she knew.
I don't know how I knew. I swear to God. Like, I'm not trying to be funny. I literally said, I was like, oh. I was like, that's Christian Bale. And he was like, no, it's not. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess it's not. Turn up
half an hour later, I ate shit. But like, yeah. Like,
yeah, and he was like, oh my God, it is. And I was like, wait, huh? Like, and now I'm confused again. Like, you told me it wasn't. And so I like, and Patrick kept going like, how did you know? They literally haven't given anything away. How did, and I was like, I don't know. Like, I literally do not know what in me possessed me to be like, oh, that's definitely him.
I think when I watched it for the first time, I was looking at his secondary character and being like, that looks suspiciously like Christian Bale, but I'm not going to say anything just in case I'm wrong.
Well, like he's only in the movie so much, that character, that like, why would you fixate on that? You know what I mean? Like that character's only in like 2 or 3 scenes. And he's only ever shot from the back, which, like, yeah, all these things are mysterious. He's barely in it. You never see his face, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's why it's super obvious. But, like, I don't know why you would be like, oh, no, that without a doubt, like, I have figured it out, you know? I think Taylor just, like, noticed. She was like, oh, yeah, that's Christian Bale.
And I am a horrible person to watch movies with because if I have a thought, it's coming out. Like, I can't just
she
keep things inside.
She always figures out who the killer is. She always, yeah, it's infuriating.
I'm a bit
but this time I genuinely didn't even try. Like, normally
you
I
never
like,
do. You're not like some master sleuth. You're always like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah. I think they just put off a vibe. I mean, what can I say? Vibe check. That's definitely Christian Bale.
Like, when we were watching the Psycho remake for our show. Like, we watched the original Psycho first. And to spoil a 60-year-old movie, if you haven't seen Psycho, go watch Psycho. But yeah, we're like 10 minutes into the premise of the movie. And she's like, oh, Norman Bates is also his mom, right? And I was like, are you kidding me? And he'd be like, no, that's crazy.
Yeah. And now you see why I'm confused. Because I get these things right. And then Patrick tells me that's not right. And then I spend the whole rest of the movie going like, it has to be right. Like, if it's not right, then what else is the solution? And then when it is right, I'm like, wait a minute. Am I backwards? Like, am I wrong? Am I right? Like, please, I need someone to tell me. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I just have, like, an intuition, I guess, for better or for worse.
I mean, I think it's quite fun to be able to figure stuff out, but it is one of those things when you're watching it with someone else, because I'm also one of those people where if I'm thinking something, I'm going to say it. So I'd be like sat there watching film and I'm like, well, why is that happening? And what? And my boyfriend's like, well, obviously I don't know why that's happening because
I've never seen the movie either.
They haven't explained it. And I'm there like, oh, sorry.
We'll find out in an hour.
Yeah, they're like, he's like, give it a chance, Jess, give it a chance. I'm like, oh, sorry, just letting all my thoughts out.
I also tend to fixate on like the smallest shit. Like I convince myself that these tiny little details will become major plot points. Like I'll just be like, his dog is like, why does he have a dog or something? And then I'll just like convince myself that that's going to be important. And I'll be like, Patrick, why do you think he has a dog? And Patrick will be like, what the fuck? I don't know, to add fucking character to him? And I'm like, no, I don't know. There's something sinister about the dog. And then it never comes back. Like, I just notice, I like miss all the big stuff and then notice every single small detail.
It's like the Chekhov's gun theory.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You're like, everything's important. Were there any like standout moments in this film?
This is going to sound like a cop-out answer, but like, I enjoyed the magic. Like I cared a lot less about those characters when they were just like navigating their lives and their rivalry, and was much more captivated by the performances and like the like beauty of the film when they were just like doing their magic. I will say like this is a perfect example of small things that I notice when he like crushes the bird. And like the audience does not know that the bird is dead. Like the little boy catches on. I was like, the bird is dead. Like the little boy's right. And Patrick was like, no, he's not. He's a little boy. And I was like, I'm telling you that the bird is dead. And then the next scene, they're like, the bird is dead. Here's another one. And I was like, see? But so I would say that was my least favorite scene in the movie because I always get very upset about animals dying. But no, I really enjoyed the magic. Like Hugh Jackman at the end of the day is this like performer. And I liked him doing his thing. I think he just really shined in those moments.
He is like perfectly cast.
He's like super theatrical in everything that he does in like life, it seems. So this role is like perfect for him in that regard because he's playing this very theatrical character, which is in direct contrast to Christian Bale's character. And also, I guess, to the way that Christian Bale is as an actor as well, in that he's much less theatrical. So they were kind of perfectly cast to be these sort of rivals.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
I think for me, it would probably be the scene where Piper Perabo drowns, which sounds like really dark. Like, oh, I like the movie where the scene where she dies. But I just feel like for a little while, I was like, okay, I don't know what all this is for. Like, I didn't get... I don't know where we were going with it for a while. And that scene, on top of just being like really emotional and really effective and like a lot of everybody's best work in the movie, like just really made it click for me. And is like a legitimately good, like it's effective, not only emotionally, but it's like effective for the plot, you know, like it is not some stupid little reason why they don't like each other. Not only is it effective emotionally, that scene, like it is a legitimate reason for these two guys to like have this beef. Like they have like legitimate like PTSD about this thing, you know, and like they can see like if they screw up, like what could happen. And so they're like dedicated their lives to not only like hating each other with every ounce of their being, but also like making it really safe and like putting on a really good show. Like they are like the two most dedicated men on the planet.
Yeah, I thought it spoke volumes when they did the scene where they try to do the trick without the bird and they like make the contraption. I was just like, oh, like they that was just like a small moment that just like really, I don't know, it showed me like, oh, these are two guys who are so committed to just becoming better, not better like at fooling people, but just like better at their craft, better at doing this ethically, better at making sure that it's a safe experience for everyone. And so it's just so like, so viscerally upsetting when someone ends up getting hurt from that as well.
Yeah, it was this,
because they have good intentions.
Mm. It's like a theme running through the film is like this sort of constant striving for greatness, and now how it affects everyone else around them negatively, and they just can't see that because they're like, I'm gonna be the best.
Oh, you mean the theme in every single Christopher Nolan movie?
True.
You said
it, not me.
It gets to the point where you're like, all right, Chris, like you got to go to therapy.
This is therapy.
We're back to English class and read any book with any other theme.
What's something I found really interesting is actually the parallel between the two characters, and how something with like Hugh Jackman's character, he's like always wanting to be in the spotlight, and when he has his body double, which can I just say, Hugh Jackman does some great teeth acting with that body double.
Oh my god. The dentures they give this man are unbelievable.
So he's got his like body double, and he's the one who gets the spotlight at the end, and you can tell that Hugh Jackman's character absolutely hates it, and he's taking his bow from underneath the stage. Christian Bale's character makes a big joke about that, and this constant fight for like the limelight, and then even in his last dying moments, Hugh Jackman asks, who was it who came out of the box at the end? And Christian Bale is like, it was both of us. We took it in turns. And it's like the final sort of like stab in the back where it's like, look, we all got to have the limelight and you kind of never did. Because when he had his contraption from David Bowie, it was like...
David Bowie, by the way.
Can we talk about that? When I peeked at the cast before we started it and I was like... Do you know who plays Nikola Tesla? And he was like, no. And I was like, David Bowie.
No, I said, yes, I do, actually. And then you said it anyway.
My bad. and we just went, what a weird guy with such an odd career. I mean, a fantastic guy, but.
When I originally watched the film, hadn't seen the cast list at all. And he appeared and I was like, David Bowie? Is that, and I'm like squinting at the screen like, is it him? Am I going crazy? Great moment for me though, because I love David Bowie, so when he appeared I was like, there he is.
The whole cast is like, it's really deep.
it's you look at some of the people individually and you go like, huh, I wonder how that's gonna work, and then it does perfectly.
It is a really well-cast film.
Yes. The only thing I would change is just like infinitely more Piper Barabo.
Yeah. Yeah. Died too soon.
I will always take more.
Well, even then it's got her and like Rebecca Hall, and it's just got like a bunch of people that like, even before they were like, now it's like a total, it's a cast of like all bangers, you know, but that like wasn't really a thing yet. You know, even like Hugh Jackman, like, yeah, he'd been in the X-Men movies and stuff, but like he hadn't really made a ton of movies, you know. But now it's like the most obvious cast. Like you'd pick all those same people now, you know.
And that's when you go like, "Damn it, Christopher Nolan! Like, how can you create something as evil as Tenet and then like perfectly cast like with clairvoyance this you know, the set of people? Like, it just will never fucking make sense to me."
Is a testament to whoever the casting director was for this. Like, they put that cast together perfectly. Obviously, I think, well, Christopher Nolan has enough sort of sway in the industry to be like, you want to come do this film? I know you want to come do this film. Let's go. So I feel like it's not difficult for him to get people on board because of who he is. But they did put this cast together so well. Like, everyone was so perfect for every role they played.
That's like what like drives me nuts about his movies, is that like they are so like, I don't mean this like thematically, I don't mean this for like twist, but like they're just like so obvious. Like they're always so perfectly cast. Everybody always says the perfect thing. And for some reason that gets like annoying, You know, like when Christian Bale's character is like about to be hung and they're like, any last words? And what he chooses to say is abracadabra. I mean, like in any other movie, you'd be like, wow, that just ruined the movie. That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But for this, it was just like, it just, it totally made sense. You know, like it felt really earnest. Like the whole last 10 minutes, like it comes back around and Michael Caine's like, you see why he's been delivering this speech the whole time. And like, it's like 10 things in a row that could like totally go wrong and like be really hokey and cheesy and like throw the whole thing off the tracks, but they all work for some reason.
Yeah. Cause his films are very much like spectacle and they work really well on the big screen. And that's why people love them. And this was no different. It had the big set pieces. It had the big moments where you're like, wait, what is going on? I still think like about that reveal at the end where he's walking down the like corridor filled with the tanks of all his clones' dead bodies. Nothing like some nice decoration in your basement.
Like that shouldn't work, you know? Like you should be like, wow, that is ridiculous. But for some reason, like the entire movie, you're like, yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yep.
Cause you just think, well, that's impossible. That's not something that can happen. But you're just, because the thing is as well with the whole film, most of it is really like the magic tricks and stuff are grounded in some sort of reality, like within what magic tricks are in normal everyday life. They're, you know, sleight of hand, all of those different things. So they're grounded in all this reality. And then all of a sudden it's like Nikola Tesla's going to come in and create you this cloning machine. And, and so it's a very weird pivot for the film to suddenly have this like science magic, real magic element coming into play.
Yeah, they take all this time to like make sure that they're like, oh, everything that we're doing you could do too, except transport yourself.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I definitely think it was an interesting choice. But it just like totally worked, you know, like Patrick was saying, like this, I feel like if you break this movie down into moments, like these things don't individually, you know, create an incredibly, you know, poignant film. But when you look at it all together, like he just has a way of doing it sometimes.
Most of the time, probably.
No, most of the time. I'm just, like I said, I'm low-key a Christopher Nolan hater. But I also like almost everything I've seen. So I shouldn't.
One day he's going to, like his last movie is going to be like a Nathan Fielder-esque, like, this whole thing was one giant movie and we were the suckers, like he was the Hugh Jackman and we fell for all of his illusions or some bullshit like that.
You know, have you guys ever seen on TikTok where people will be like celebrity birthdays like around the table and like who I would seat next to each other to make it the most drama filled night? I think like, or like people will be like, My nightmare blunt rotation is Nathan Fielder and Christopher Nolan. I think I would just like walk into traffic. I could not handle that.
Was there any like standout moments from Hugh Jackman in particular that you were like, what did you think of his performance as a whole? Because I thought he did a really good job with this, but like we said, very theatrical character. So it's in his ballpark.
Yeah, I think it's just like a slam dunk for him, you know, like just like being cast. Taylor, we were talking about this for something recently. And just like if you cast your movie correctly, you're like the movie will be good.
It does the work for you.
Yeah. And like he's just like in 2006. I mean, like I said, even maybe today, like I don't know who else is just like he's just the perfect fit for this. And so like all he's got to do is like do his thing, which he's very good at. And he's done a zillion times in a bunch of different stuff. He's doing on Broadway 8 shows a week right now. You know, he's won a bunch of awards for. If he just does that thing, it'll work.
But I think for me, like those moments, really, like yeah, we talked about how like he's performative in this and perfectly cast, and you know he does what he does best in this film. But there are also just these like little tiny moments where he just like silently like seethes and the jealousy just like oozes out of him. And I think that those are really powerful too. It like shows his versatility. Like he can be loud and flamboyant, but he can also just be like quiet and like show so much emotion through that. And I think that that was so interesting because like that's what Christian Bale does really well, you know, like he's a lot more quiet and you know, his deliveries. And so it was just like, I don't know, I appreciated the small few moments where they kind of like flipped for just a second.
I think as well, like that played out really well in the fact that, I don't know about you guys, but I never knew who to root for in this film. Like, I was never sat there going, oh, I want you to be the one to succeed.
Me either.
Like, both of them, I was like, you're both awful people. but also within a likable way, in a weird sort of sense.
I was rooting for Andy Serkis.
Yes. He needed to be the best magician, really. But it was really hard to pinpoint as to who I thought was going to be the person to root for. And then you get to the end point and you realize that you weren't really rooting for any of them and that they were both making big old mistakes just in this kind of like, and it is kind of that showmanship thing that's a lot of, it's a stereotype, but a lot of very like arrogant, I must be the best of the best kind of attitude that exists within all of most entertainment industry areas. And they played that really well, and it was something that Hugh Jackman did really well. I was very impressed because when I've seen Hugh Jackman in a lot of things, I know him as Wolverine, I know him for doing Jean Valjean in the Les Mis film and for doing The Greatest Showman, and that's kind of what I know him for, those big moments, those big sort of like showman-y stuff. And even with like the Wolverine films, it's very, you know, Marvel films are on a whole, they're quite campy and like in your face. And so seeing him do those quiet moments, like you said, Taylor, like that's really was the moments that I was more interested in with him, just from an acting perspective.
Have you ever seen The Assassination of Jesse James?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it's very similar. Brad Pitt plays Jesse James, and he's like this larger than life, you know, like this Wild West celebrity, and everybody knows who he is. And he does a very similar thing in that movie that Hugh does here, which is like he plays to his strengths really well. And like he understands that he's incredibly charming and incredibly handsome. And like if he does his bit, it'll work. But also, when you like take your foot off the gas just a little bit, and you just like put like a little bit of mystery in there, like you put like a little bit of self-doubt, you don't make it so that this guy is just this like impossibly awesome figure. He's got something underneath, and that's what like really propels the performance. And I think that that's what Hugh does here really well. It's like, yeah, he can do all the show stuff really well. Like we've seen The Greatest Showman, he can be huge and bold and whatever. But it's like when he like takes a step back and isn't that person for like 5 seconds, that I think is like what makes it really interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this was really interesting to see him in this role in particular, to be able to see those moments.
I also have to give credit where credit is due and say I am not like the biggest Christian Bale fan. He kind of annoys me most times he's on screen.
Yeah.
And I will say this is the most likable he's ever been, shockingly enough, for me.
I agree.
I was at least charmed by it in this.
I think he does almost sort of the opposite thing, which is like, I mean, maybe that's like super clear and that's why the movie works really well. But like Christian Bale's normal thing is like to be kind of mumbly and like kind of a weirdo. And like sort of unlikable, but it's a lot of unlikable characters. And so he does the opposite thing. Like his little flashes are like when he's really showy and when he's really ridiculous. And when he's like that, he wants to be the magician, you know, like those are, it seems like the total opposite of like all the obvious parts of his character. And so I think that's why they work really well together. They're both doing the same thing, just on opposite ends of the spectrum.
I wonder whether it was a conscious choice with the casting process, where they were thinking about stuff like that. I'm probably putting too much into it, and they were just like, let's get Christian Bale and let's get Hugh Jackman. But I do wonder.
You just like Christian Bale. They had already done the first Batman movie together, so yeah. Maybe they just liked working together.
Yeah,
because he does work with him a lot. So
yeah, I think that they foil each other so perfectly that I almost like want to believe that it was accidental, that they just are these foils. Maybe that's not true when they did like intense character work, which like I'm sure they did otherwise, but I don't know. I just like, I want to believe that Chris Nolan just did a great thing here and cast them perfectly. And it just kind of fell into place like that. Mm. That's what I choose to believe.
Yeah. That's how a lot of things work out. It's just like circumstance brings it all together in a nice way. So are there any like performances by Hugh Jackman that you think of that you really like, or that are like favorites of yours?
So one big blind spot that I had was I had never seen Logan, which I know is like everybody's favorite X-Men movie. And so like in preparation for this, I wanted to make sure that I had seen it. So I went back and I watched that. And I feel like I've seen like all of the, like, I don't know, like the most popular entries, you know? There are two that I want to shout out though. One is a movie called Eddie the Eagle. I don't know if either one of you guys have ever seen Eddie the Eagle.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't, but it's on my watch list.
It's Taron Egerton is like training to be like a skier in the Olympics. And Hugh is his coach. And it's like another example of him. Like this guy just makes every kind of movie. Like Eddie the Eagle was probably made for like $8, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
But he can be in these huge X-Men movies and he can be nominated for Oscars and stuff, but he just likes this sort of smaller movies like that. And he gets like a really just like straightforward performance in that movie, which kind of sounds like it's not a compliment, but it really is for a guy who's really showy and can do crazy stuff to just be just like a regular person, I think is very impressive. Mm-hmm. Like when you look like Hugh Jackman, it's like not easy to be a regular person, I don't think. But he does that really well. And then the other, I don't want to steal Taylor, so I'll let Taylor say it.
Yeah, mine is Prisoners. Mm-hmm. Prisoners was like a turning point for me in like my love for film. When I saw that movie for the first time, I was like, this is on another level from like what I watch, you know, like my rom-com like bullshit. Like I was transfixed. Like I was like disgusted and also completely captivated. Like that movie had me in the palm of its hand. I watched it like 10 times within the first year that it came out. And I don't think I've really seen it since. But he's just incredible in that movie. And I think that, like, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal and between like Jake Gyllenhaal and Paul Dano, and like there's such a fierce like cast that are all giving these like larger than life performances. Like obviously he's giving one as well, like in the pursuit of his daughter. But I also feel like in a way he just like he also knows when to take the back burner. You know, like Jake Gyllenhaal and Paul Dano don't really do that because like they're directly kind of going head to head. But I feel like, you know, he's just fantastic in that movie. Like your heart is just like absolutely breaking for him the entire time. And you're also just like, you can't believe the lengths that he will go. Like, I love that movie. I'm almost like scared to rewatch it, which is why I haven't, because I'm so worried it's not going to be nearly as good as I remember. And I just like to remember it as I remember it.
No, it is. But it's crazy definitely good. It's
definitely due for a rewatch.
It's unbelievable. There are like 10 amazing performances in that movie.
Yeah.
And like you don't get that very often.
And they don't feel like they compete in a sense of like, yeah, there's only room for one. Like, no, there's room for all of them, but you have to buckle up because you are along for the ride. Like, Have you ever seen that movie, Jess?
Yeah, I have, a long time ago, and it is also due rewatch, but I remember when I watched it, I was like, holy shit.
That's one that's just like, if you like want to know like how do actors like give it their all, you can watch every single person in that movie. I mean, like everybody.
Absolutely. That movie is a complete acting class, like but in a way of like normal people can't do that, like that they took it to a level that no one else can take it to, like they're so good. Like when Patrick and I, well, you know, Patrick has a background in acting, and he used to always say, like, occasionally I'll see performances and go, I should never do this again. Like, they've got it. They're good. Like, they don't need me. And, like, that is one of those movies where I go, like, they are so good. It's like, why are they not just doing everything we ever see? Like, you know, like, why aren't they in every single movie?
Yeah. I know that feeling as an actor. You watch something and you go,
you just go, like, I will literally never be that good. Like, I would never have it within me to do that. It's one of the many reasons why I stopped acting.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. And that film, his performance in that film is insane. And that, I definitely need to rewatch.
So good.
A film that I love of his that is just pure nostalgia for me. I don't know whether you guys will have ever seen this film. It's a very British film. Have you ever seen Flushed Away?
Oh my God. I don't know.
Is it a very British film?
I didn't realize it was a British film.
Well, it's like, it's Aardman Animation, so they're British-based production company, and it's like, so the same people
who they're the Wallace and Gromit guys, right?
Yeah. I didn't know how far it got.
Oh no, we had Flushed Away.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we had it. I don't know. Like, I've seen it, but it doesn't, like, it was, I think it was something I watched like once or twice, and I don't even know if I watched it all the way through. So I don't have like vivid memories of it, but I have honestly more of a memory of that movie like in the ether than I do watching it.
I used to watch that film all the time as a kid. I don't know why. It's about a bunch of rats just chilling in the sewers. But for some reason, I was like, this film's great. I love it. And so whenever I think of Hugh Jackman, I sometimes think of Flushed Away. I'm like, ah, Flushed Away. Which film of these two that we just watched did you prefer?
Movie 43.
I mean, do we have to ask? No, it's The Prestige. We probably have the easiest answer to this question ever. Yeah, The Prestige.
The Prestige. I also agree. It is The Prestige for me. If I know I will have to watch Movie 43 again at some point for this podcast, but if I can get away with not doing it.
Yeah, you can pass.
Just go on YouTube and watch the clip that person is in.
Where can people find you on the internets?
Yeah, so the big place is featurepresentationvideo.com. That's where we sort of house all of the stuff that we do. We host two podcasts. One is called the Vince Vaughn-a-thon, where we're watching every single Vince Vaughn movie in order, and I'm increasingly unaware of why we're doing this. And then the other is called Why Two Kids, Y2KIDZ, and it's all about children's entertainment and sort of nostalgia stuff for us from the late 90s, early 2000s, because we were born in the 90s, but we're not really 90s kids. 90s kids are kind of like a level above us, we think. So we're Y2 kids, and we're watching a bunch of fun stuff over there. So if you go to featurepresentationvideo.com and you put your email address in, which is free, we'll send you everything that we do, all of our shows that we host, and all the reviews that we write, and all that kind of fun stuff. We have something every single day of the week.
Amazing.
We are also, I will say the same thing that we said to Billy, and that is, we are open to British invasioning any of our podcasts. We have already done Vince's one, like, I think British kind of film, which was Blackball, but I'd love to hear about, you know, what you watched as a kid. If Flushed Away was around between the years of 1995 to 2005, we can do a Flushed Away
episode. Just barely missed 2006.
Oh man.
I love your Y2 Kids podcast. I think it's great. I listen to it. I'm like, this nostalgia is hitting in. It's so
Thank
good.
Thank you.
I'm glad that it translates well across the pond.
The other question I really like to ask people is if there's anyone else that you think I should discuss on this podcast.
Vince Vaughn.
Obviously. So we had talked but about not- that, like doing Vince, but we haven't gotten to either one of Vince's, like, we haven't gotten to the lowest, we haven't gotten to the highest yet.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah. If you want, ever want to have us back once we finish this stupid project that we're working on, we'll come and talk about those two movies.
Yeah, oh, once, you've, once you've done those films, then you can come back.
We've only got like six more months left.
Oh my God.
He's been in a lot.
He's been in a lot of movies.
Yes. For worse. I would say for better or for worse, but it's for worse.
There's so many good ideas. Like the person we'd originally talked about doing was Margot Robbie.
Which great, is like great pick.
You, someone who can watch those movies on whatever streaming service you can watch them on over there that we don't have should do that because that I think that would be a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I'll be very jealous listening to the episode.
Yeah. Next episode, I'm not going to be discussing an actor. Shock. What's going on? I'm going to be discussing a director. I'm going to be discussing Bong Joon-ho's
top film. That's such a good pick.
Really excited. So his highest rated film, probably as most people would expect, is Parasite. It's 8.5 stars on IMDb.
Can I guess what the lowest is?
Go on.
Is it Barking Dogs Never Bite?
Indeed. It is Barking Dogs Never Bite, which has 6.9 stars. Thank you again so much, Taylor and Patrick, for coming on to this.
Thank you. We're so happy to be here.
I hope you had fun. I had a lot of fun discussing these films.
Thank you for staying up late so that we could do it after we got
work. Yes, it is currently nearly 1 a.m. in the UK.
Oh, we will let you go then.
But I am a-okay. So yes, thank you so much to everyone who's listened. I hope you enjoyed, and I will see you next time on Better Than Bad. Thank you.